Chapter 39. Kovach knew there was trouble when he tried to reach Tom Severance from the Golden Skies radio room and got no response. He didn't even get a ring. With the radios switched off on Kovach's orders, it wasn't until 20 minutes later that word reached the ship from a satellite news broadcast. A meteor had been spotted streaking across southern Europe. Estimated at weighing a ton, it had hit an island off the coast of Turkey. A tsunami alert had been issued, but there was only one report from a Greek ferry about a wave, and it was said to be only a few feet high and presented no danger. He knew it was no meteor. It had to have been an atomic bomb. His two prisoners hadn't been lying at all. The American authorities knew about their plan and had authorized a nuclear strike. The light people had seen streaking southward across Europe must have been from the cruise missile that delivered the warhead. Kovach hit the mute button on the television remote to cut out the anchorwoman's speculative blather. He had to consider his options. If they had sent operatives to the Golden Sky, they must have known he was on the ship. No. That logic wasn't right. He was here because he suspected they were aboard first. So they didn't know where he was. His solution, then, was simple. Kill his two captives and leave the ship when it made its scheduled call on Heraklion, the Cretan capital. "But they'll be waiting," he muttered. Whoever sent the two Americans, the CIA most likely, but what did it matter, would have operatives at the port to meet the ship. He wondered if he could slip through their dragnet. Then he wondered if it was worth the risk. Better to simply stop the cruise ship and escape in one of the lifeboats. There were thousands of islands in the Aegean to hide on until he planned his next move. That still left the question of the prisoners. Should he kill them or take them as hostages? He wasn't concerned about controlling the man who looked like a stoner to Kovach, but there was something about the woman that told him she could be dangerous. Better to kill them both than worry about them trying to get away. That left one last detail. The virus. It lived only for a couple of weeks in its sealed canister, so it wouldn't do him much good after his escape. Releasing it would infect the 1,000 or so people on the ship, and with a little luck, they would spread it when they returned to their homes. But he didn't think there was much chance of that. The ship would be quarantined and the passengers held in isolation until they were no longer infectious. It was better than nothing. Kovach got up from his chair and walked onto the bridge. Night had fully descended, and the only illumination came from the consoles and radar repeaters. There were two officers on watch and two helmsmen. Kovach's assistant, Laird Bergman, was outside on the flying bridge, enjoying a cigarette under the stars.
"I want you to go down to the laundry and release the virus manually," Kovach told him.
"Did something happen to the transmitter?"
"Nothing that concerns you right now. Just get down to the laundry and do what I say. Then find Rolf and report back up here. We're getting off this ship."
"What's going on?"
"Trust me on this. We're going to be arrested as soon as we reach Crete. This is the only way."
One of the officers suddenly shouted, "Where the hell did he come from, and what does he think he's playing? Call the captain up here and sound the collision alarm." He rushed out to the opposite flying bridge.
"Stay with me," Kovach said, and he and Bergman jogged after the ship's officer.
A huge freighter was coming straight at the Golden Sky. She looked like a ghost ship with all her running lamps extinguished, but she was cutting through the water at a good 20 knots. The officer shouted back to the others on the bridge.
"Didn't you see him on radar?"
"He was 10 miles away last time I checked," the junior officer replied.
"And that was only a few minutes ago, I swear."
"Hit the alarms."
The Golden Sky's bellowing horns had no effect. The freighter continued to aim straight for them, as if it intended to slice the cruise ship in half. Just when it seemed there was no avoiding a collision, the freighter's bow turned sharper than any ship the officer had ever seen, and she came alongside with only a few dozen feet separating them. It was an incredible piece of ship handling, and had the officer not been so angry, he would have been impressed. Kovacs recalled that there had been reports of a large ship making an illegal passage of the Corinth Canal the night the Hanley kid had been snatched. He had always known that the two incidents were related, and now a freighter makes an appearance on this of all nights. With the feral instincts of a rat, he knew they were here for him. He moved back inside and away from the crewmen. Their walkie-talkies didn't work well around so much steel, but he raised Rolf Strong, the third man who had choppered to the ship with him.
"Rolf, it's Kovacs. I need you to clear everyone out of the engine room and lock yourself inside. No one is to enter, and kill anyone who resists. Do you understand?"
Unlike Bergman, Strong never questioned orders.
"Clear the engine room and let no one enter. Copy."
Kovacs pulled his pistol from under his windbreaker and said to Bergman, "Go out and find 6 or 7 women. I don't care if they're passengers or crew. Bring them back here as quickly as you can. Also, go to my cabin and bring the rest of our weapons." Before Bergman could inevitably ask for an explanation, Kovacs added, "Tom Severance is dead. The plan is ruined, and the people responsible for it are on that freighter. Go."
"Yes, sir."
The Serb locked the bridge door before threading a silencer onto the end of his automatic and dispassionately shooting the two crewmen and one of the bridge officers. The soft reports were drowned out by the blaring air horns, so the second officer didn't know what was going on until he stepped in off the flying bridge and saw the bodies. He had time to look to Kovacs before two crimson blooms appeared on his starched white uniform shirt. His jaw worked silently for a moment before he collapsed against a bulkhead and slumped to the deck. Suspecting that the operatives on the freighter were going to throw a line onto the cruise ship to send over a boarding party, Kovacs stepped up to the controls. There was a dial to order more or less speed from the ship's engines and a simple joystick to turn the rudder. Maneuvering such a massive vessel was as easy as steering a fishing smack. He cranked the throttle to maximum and veered the ship away from the rusted-out freighter. The Golden Sky was only a few years old, and while she was built for luxury more than speed, he was supremely confident he could outrun the derelict. They started to pull ahead, easily outpacing the freighter, but only for a few moments. It, too, put on a burst of speed and exactly mirrored his turn. Kovacs was dismayed that a ship that looked ready to dissolve into a rust stain could move so swiftly. He checked the throttle control and noticed that if he pulled the dial upward, he could draw what was called emergency power. He did, and watched their speed continue to increase. Looking across the bridge, he saw the freighter slowly falling back. Kovacs grunted with satisfaction. It would take an hour or two to put enough distance between the two ships for them to stop so he could lower a lifeboat, but it didn't matter. As if the freighter were toying with him, the big merchantman inexorably accelerated to match his speed and once again positioned itself no more than 30 feet off the Golden Sky's beam. A quick glance confirmed the cruise ship was pounding across the flat sea at 36 knots. There was no way the freighter should be able to achieve that speed, let alone maintain it. Kovacs' frustration quickly morphed into rage. There came a sharp burst of automatic fire from the corridor behind the bridge, followed by a chorus of high-pitched screams. He rushed to the wheelhouse's sole entrance and threw back the bolt, his pistol at the ready. The ship's captain lay in a widening pool of blood on the carpeted deck, and 4 other officers cowered along the passageway. They must have tried to rush Bergman when he returned. Behind them, his assistant had 7 women huddled in abject terror.
"Inside. Now,"
Kovacs snarled and gestured with his weapon for the women to enter the bridge. They moved in a tight cluster under Bergman's watchful eye, tears streaming down their cheeks.
Stop this at once, the senior-most officer demanded.
Kovach shot him in the face and closed the bridge's thick metal door. He grabbed one of the women. A dark-haired beauty he recognized was a waitress from the dining room, and raced back to the helm. He positioned her between him and the stalking freighter as a human shield, in case they had snipers. He noted that the merchantman had narrowed the gap even more.
"I believe the game is called chicken," he said to no one in particular, and savagely pushed the rudder control to port.
At this speed, the ship responded nimbly, and her bow came over. It slammed into the side of the freighter with a titanic scream of tearing metal. The impact heeled the ship to starboard, staggering Kovach, who had braced for it. The bow railing was crushed in, and the two ships grated against each other. A dozen balconies for the most expensive cabins were torn away, while all over the ship, passengers and crew were thrown to the deck. There were injuries throughout the vessel, though nothing more severe than a few broken bones.
Kovach turned the ship away from the scene of impact. The freighter turned with him but kept a much wider separation this time, its captain obviously leery of another collision. He wasn't sure what inspired him, but Kovach had a sudden idea to end this quickly. Leaving the helm position, he yanked one of the dead officers from the floor and walked the corpse outside, with one hand on the officer's belt and the other on the back of his neck, so it appeared he was walking on his own. Kovach paused for a second to make sure the men on the other ship had a chance to see him before rushing the flying bridge rail and heaving the body over. He ducked behind the rail and couldn't watch the body fall the 100 feet to the sea, but he was certain his opponents had. Kovach knew they wouldn't let an innocent man drown, and it would take them at least an hour to rescue him. He liked the irony that they would be forced to give up their pursuit for a dead man.
"Damage report," Juan called as soon as the two ships pulled apart. "Crews are on their way," Max said straight away. When they hadn't been able to raise the cruise ship on the radio, their plan had been to get the crew's attention and hail them with loudspeakers. The owner of the Golden Line was most likely complicit in Severance's plot, but it couldn't involve all of his officers and crew. If they could get a warning to them about Zelimir Kovach's real reason for being aboard, they could put an end to this once and for all. Cabrillo had fully expected the shipmaster to turn away, as he had, but never anticipated being intentionally rammed. No captain on Earth would jeopardize his ship and crew with a stunt like that. There was only one logical conclusion. Kovach has taken over the Golden Sky. Max eyed him and nodded imperceptibly.
Only thing that makes sense.
How do you want to play it?
We'll lay up alongside again and fire over grappling hooks. I don't know how many men he has, but I think a dozen of us ought to suffice.
I like your Captain Blood style.
Avast ye, matey.
If he tries to turn into us again, you boys are going to be in a world of hurt.
It's your job to make certain he doesn't.
Cabrillo was about to call down to Eddie to prepare a boarding party when Holly suddenly shouted, "Someone was just tossed off the wing bridge!"
"What?"
Max and Juan said in unison.
"A guy in a dark windbreaker just threw what looked like an officer off the wing bridge."
"Helm, full reverse," Juan snapped on the intercom. "Man overboard! Man overboard! This is not a drill! Rescue team to the boat garage! Prepare to launch the rib!"
"He's playing dirty," Max said.
"We can play dirtier.
Weps, aim the gun cameras on the Golden Skies Bridge ASAP and put them up on the main screen." A moment later, the images flashed on the monitor. Because the cruise ship was so much taller than the Oregon, the best angle came from the camera mounted on the ship's mast. When the camera was switched to low light mode, they could clearly see into the bridge. There were women standing at all the port side windows, hostages placed there so a sharpshooter couldn't get a clean hit. There was a figure crouched at the helm, possibly Kovach, with another woman pressed tightly against him.
"He's no dummy, Juan.
We can't risk a shot with him using those folks as human shields.
Chairman, it's Mike. Doors are open and we are ready to launch.
Juan looked to see their speed through the water, waited a moment for them to slow to the maximum safe speed, and ordered Trono and his rescue team to go. The rigid inflatable boat flew down the Teflon-coated ramp and hit the seas hard. Mike turned the rib immediately to port to ease the transition into the swiftly passing water.
We're clear.
Using thermal detection gear, they should have no problem spotting the officer. Mike Trono had been a pararescue jumper before joining the corporation and was cross-trained as a medic. There was no need for the Oregon to stand by.
Helm, bring us to 90% of our former speed. If he turns, match him, and if he slows, don't close the gap. I want him to think we can't catch up.
Max shot Juan a questioning look.
We need a little time to get a boarding party organized, and I don't want him pressured into thinking he should keep throwing people overboard.
Cabrillo was changing in his cabin when he got word from Holly that Mike had found the officer and reported he'd been shot twice in the chest. Juan calmly gave his orders that the rib should remain deployed in case Kovach tossed someone alive off the bridge. Inside, his emotions distilled down to a burning fury. He didn't care that they had wasted minutes searching for a corpse. With the Oregon's massive speed advantage, there was no way they would ever lose the Golden Sky. The anger was directed at himself. An innocent man was dead because he came charging in like a bull in a china shop. There could have been another way to capture Kovach and rescue his people. He should have come up with a better plan. His phone rang and he snatched it up, barking, "Cabrillo!"
"Knock it off right now," Dr. Huxley said.
"What are you talking about?"
"I just heard about what happened, and I know you're blaming yourself for it, and I want you to stop this instant." As soon as the news broke that EOS had been destroyed, Kovach went into trapped rat mode. He's cornered and panicked. That's why that officer was killed, not because of us. You and I have been over this 100 times before. You aren't at fault, so don't take blame that isn't yours. All right?"
Juan blew out a breath.
"And here I am working myself into a world-record bout of recrimination and self-loathing."
"I knew you were. That's why I called."
"Thanks, Hux. Go take him down before he kills anyone else, and you'll feel much better."
"Doctor's orders?"
"Exactly."
15 minutes later, Juan was on deck with his team. He divided them into 2 groups of 6, with Eddie leading the first and him in charge of the second. In order to maintain control of the cruise ship, Kovach would need people on the bridge as well as in the engine room to stop crewmen from killing power. That would be Eddie's responsibility. Juan wanted Kovach all to himself. They all wore black form-fitting outfits over Kevlar body armor that wouldn't snag on obstacles and impede their assault. Their boots had soft rubber soles, and each man carried a gas mask, because all sported tear gas grenades. The interior of the Golden Sky would be brightly lit, so only one man on each team carried night vision gear. With the number of civilians aboard ship, Cabrillo ordered half loads for their ammunition to avoid overpenetration, killing someone beyond their target. He carried a Glock instead of his usual FNs, since even a half charge of powder would send the smaller bullets through a man. Their grappling hooks were launched by a shotgun-type weapon. The lines they trailed were incredibly strong and light, which made climbing difficult. For that, each wore special gloves with mechanical pincers to grip the monofilament.
"Max, you read?"
Juan said into his throat mic.
"You're live."
"Okay, take us in flank speed, and don't forget to tell Mike."
The acceleration was almost instantaneous. Juan slid his eyes against the brutal wind. The Golden Sky lay 4 miles ahead, her gleaming upper works making her look like a jewel on the dark waters, while her wake glowed with an ethereal trail of phosphorescence. The Oregon was moving some 20-odd knots faster than the cruise ship, so they quickly cut the distance. Kovach must be going nuts, Eddie remarked. We keep showing up like the proverbial bad penny.
Chairman, he tossed another,
Holly shouted over the radio.
It was a woman this time, and she was definitely alive.
Alert Mike. Weps, give him a squirt with the Gatling as close to the wing bridge as you can. Let Kovach know the next time he sets foot out there, we're going to shred him.
The armored plate covering the starboard side Gatling gun folded back, and the weapon peaked from its redoubt as the motor spun up its six rotating barrels. When it fired, the sound was like a mechanical buzzsaw tearing itself to pieces. A tongue of flame shot 20 feet from the Oregon's flank, and a stream of 200 depleted uranium rounds arced across the sky. They passed so close to the flying bridge that paint blistered off the metal railing. The bullets peppered the sea ahead of the ship in a multitude of tiny eruptions. The golden sky immediately turned away from the attack.
That rattled his cage. Eddie was grinning.
Max kept the Oregon 100 feet off the other ship as they came abeam, and when Kovach tried to turn into them again, Max kept just out of reach, using the bow thrusters to keep the Oregon turning tighter than the golden sky.
Max, get ready, Juan said.
Weps, prepare to fire again on my mark, but don't hit the ship.
He waited for his men to get in position on the Oregon's rail, their grappling hook guns at their shoulders.
Aim for the main deck.
Max, go!
The Oregon carved in on the liner, cutting the gap in half in just a few seconds.
Fire!
Juan said, and the Gatling shrieked again as he and the assault team launched their grappling hooks. All 12 hooks sailed across the gap, and when they heaved back on the lines, all had caught firmly. The Oregon came in even tighter, almost brushing the crew's ship, so the men wouldn't injure themselves when they arced across, while the Gatling continued to spit a continuous stream of fire across the sky's bridge.
Go!
Juan gripped the line tightly and leapt over the railing, swinging across the gap at an ever-accelerating pace. The Oregon cut away sharply behind him. He had intentionally aimed above a large row of windows and had judged the distance perfectly. His feet hit the glass, and he exploded into the deserted dining room, saving himself the tedious task of climbing up the line. His team knew to hook up outside the bridge if they got separated. He unslung the MP5 from across his back. Moving cautiously, the weapon tucked high on his shoulder so he had a constant sight picture, he weaved through the tables toward the exit. He came out on the mezzanine level of the atrium. Passengers were milling around, still dazed after the impact with the Oregon. A man was lying at the bottom of a flight of stairs being attended to by a pair of women. An elderly lady screamed when she spotted him. Juan raised the submachine gun's barrel in a non-threatening manner.
"Ladies and gentlemen, this ship has been hijacked," he said. "I am part of a United Nations hostage rescue team. Return to your cabins immediately. Tell passengers you see that they must stay in their cabins until we have secured this ship."
A man in civilian attire with the aura of authority approached him.
"I'm Greg Turner, second assistant engineer. Is there anything I can do to help?"
"Tell me the fastest way to the bridge and see that these people get to their rooms."
"How bad is it?" Turner asked.
"Have you ever heard of a good hijacking?"
"Sorry, dumb question."
"Don't sweat it."
Turner gave Juan the directions, as well as a magnetic pass card to get him into the off-limits spaces, and Cabrillo took off at a trot. When he reached the door marked No Admittance, he swiped the card through the reader and propped the door open with a nearby potted fern for the rest of his team. By his estimates, they should be only a minute behind him. He jogged past countless cabins and raced up 2 flights of stairs before emerging in the hallway that gave access to the bridge. He activated his laser sight as he slowly approached the door. Cabrillo paused when he heard voices muttering in a cabin a few doors back from the bridge entrance.
"Captain," he called softly.
The voices stopped, and someone peered around the door jamb. The single eye he saw widened in horror at his appearance.
"It's okay," Juan said softly. "I'm here to stop him. Can I speak to your captain?"
The person came fully around the corner. She was wearing a uniform, and judging by the stripes on her shoulder boards, she was the Golden Sky's first officer. She had jaw-length dark hair and perfectly tanned skin that set off her honey-brown eyes.
That butcher killed the captain and our third purser. I am Leia Voorhees, first officer.
Let's talk in there, Juan said, pointing to the cabin behind her. He followed her inside. There were two man-sized lumps on the bed with a sheet pulled over them both. Dark blood stained the chest of one and the head of the other. Leia Voorhees tried to introduce him to the rest of the officers, but Juan cut her off.
Later, tell me what you know about what's happening on the bridge.
There are two of them, she said at once.
One named Kovach, the other I'm not sure. There is a third barricaded in the engine room.
You're sure there's just one down there? When she nodded, Juan radioed this piece of information to Eddie.
Go on.
They came aboard by chopper not long after we left Istanbul. We were given orders from our head office to do whatever Kovach asked of us. They were supposedly looking for two stowaways who might have murdered a passenger.
Those stowaways are part of my team, Juan assured her. They didn't murder anyone.
Do you know where they are?
Given the circumstances, she accepted Juan's statement without question.
They were found a short while ago and are locked in the cabin's day office directly behind the bridge.
Okay, what else?
There were two ordinary seamen on duty, as well as two officers when he took over. They also have female passengers as hostages.
Who are you? Where did you come from? This is a United Nations mission. We have been shadowing this terrorist cell for some time.
Kovach shook us when he boarded your ship, so we had to act fast. I'm sorry that you couldn't be informed, and I am sorry for the danger you've been put in. It was our intention to grab Kovach earlier, but, well, the UN's a bureaucracy like any other.
The rest of Juan's squad suddenly appeared, throwing dots of laser light around the room as they checked it.
It's okay, boys, Juan called, and the weapons were lowered.
While he filled them in on what he knew, he asked Leia to draw a diagram of the bridge and called Max.
Give me a sit-rep.
Mike fished the woman from the drink. She's fine, if a little hysterical.
Kovach is still at the helm, surrounded by three of his hostages. We've spotted a second gunman, but he isn't in view right now. The three other women are still pressed to the windows.
Pull ahead of the sky and get directly in front of her so you have a clear view of everything going on. Mark and Linda are being held in an office behind the bridge. See if you can spot them.
Aye, aye.
Eddie called in to say they were in position and that they would have to blast through the door to gain access to the engine room. Juan told him to wait so they could synchronize their attack. Max radioed back, I see a door on the back wall of the bridge. It's closed right now, but I bet that's the place. Kovach has shifted his three human shields to the main bridge windows. His chief goon is down a small corridor on the starboard side, standing at what I believe is the main entrance. Cabrillo penned in the positions of everyone on the bridge on the diagram the first officer had drawn, so his team knew what to expect. To date, they had never caused what was euphemistically called collateral damage, a record Cabrillo was immensely proud of, and one he had vowed to keep. In the wake of 9/11, not only had cockpit doors on aircraft been beefed up, but a great many cruise ships had also installed reinforced doors to protect the bridge. Juan placed the plastic explosives on it himself and retreated back into the cabin. He called Eddie and Max to tell them it was a go in 30 seconds. He kept his eyes glued to his watch and held up his splayed fingers when 5 seconds remained. He dropped a finger at every tick of the clock and pressed the button on the remote with his other hand. The blast filled the hallway with reeking white smoke and was a brutal assault on their senses. Cabrillo was in motion less than a second after the shockwave rolled past the cabin door. The beam of his laser cut a ruby line through the coiling haze. He raced onto the bridge with his men at his back, rushing past the red-hot remains of the door and ignoring the pile of gore that had once been Laird Bergman.
Down! Everybody down!
The men repeated as they swept the room with their weapons.
Kovach had reacted faster than Juan thought possible. As he pegged the Serb with his laser, Kovach had already pulled one of the women in front of him and pressed his pistol to her ear. "Another step and she dies," he roared. Juan was staggered to see that his hostage wasn't a stranger. Kovach must have known she was part of their team because he had taken Linda Ross from the captain's day office and was using her as his shield.
"It's over, Kovach. Let her go. It is over for her if you move a muscle."
To emphasize his point, he pressed the gun even harder to her ear. Linda fought the pain but couldn't manage to stifle a whimper.
"Drop your weapons now or she dies. You do it and you'll follow her a second later. I realize now that I am a dead man, so what does it matter to me? But wouldn't you hate to see this young life extinguished needlessly? You have 5 seconds.
Shoot him," Linda cried.
"I'm sorry," Juan said, and let his machine pistol drop from his fingers. The incredulous look on her face crushed his heart.
"Everyone, put them down."
The men let their weapons fall to the floor. Kovach pulled his pistol away from Linda's head and aimed it at Cabrillo.
"Smart move. You will now kindly jump over the rail and return to your ship. If you follow this vessel again, I will continue to throw passengers overboard. Only from now on, I will bind their hands."
He pushed Linda into Juan's arms. 1,000 yards ahead of the golden sky, Franklin Lincoln stood at the stern rail of the Oregon, watching everything unfold through the telescopic sight of his favorite weapon, the Barrett 50-caliber sniper rifle.
"Bye-bye."
While Kovach had been concentrating on the chairman, his man had used subtle hand gestures to get the women he'd posted in front of the windows to lie flat on the floor to give Link a clear field of fire. On the bridge, they heard only a quiet ping as the bullet passed through the safety glass. The sound of it hitting Kovach between the shoulders was something altogether different, a thick, meaty tone like a hammer striking carpet. Blood fountained from his chest as the bullet transited his body with enough kinetic impact to toss his corpse a good 5 feet.
"Did you doubt me?"
Juan smiled down at Linda.
"I should have known when I didn't see Link," she said with a saucy grin, her composure fully restored. "I assumed that was him."
"I can't think of anyone else when I need a $1 million shot."
"Well, it was Max. Congratulate Link. He was dead on target. Linda's fine." Juan pulled away his earbud and put the radio on speaker mode so everyone could hear.
"Hi, Max," she said.
"How are you doing, honey?"
"Other than this lousy cold, I'm fine."
Mark had been released from the office and the flexi-cuffs cut away from his wrists and ankles. He shook Juan's hand, smiling broadly.
"I've been thinking," Max continued. "You guys should probably check down in the laundry room. I think you'll find that is how they plan to disperse the virus."
Mark's smile fell until it had turned into a pout. His moment of glory had been stolen. Juan read his emotions perfectly. Mark had figured it out, too, and was doubtlessly going to impress the nubile Miss Dahl with his insight. He didn't have the heart to tell him his competition for her affections was a bona fide astronaut now, and in his book, that trumped just about anything in ways to impress a girl.